Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler. I welcome you to my program that is aptly enough called the Michael Cutler Hour. I hope you've all had a great week. Looking forward to a terrific weekend with all sorts of festivities hopefully coming up for all of you out there. I'll tell you, the program, and those of you familiar with me know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Today, of course, that has been replaced. Under the George W. Bush administration, they created something known as DHS. They call it the Department of Homeland Security for a bunch of reasons. I've come to call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. And boy, oh boy, are we surrendering day by day. And that's the point to my program, to try to provide you with perspectives that the major news outlets refuse to discuss, or at least discuss fairly, openly, and honestly. Last week, we were treated to a speech, and I use that term treated very loosely, by President Barack Obama, who said he was using prosecutorial discretion to provide what he claimed would be 800,000 young people or kids or young immigrants. Boy, he sure had a way with words last Friday, with employment authorization, because purportedly they had been less than 16 years old when they were dragged here kicking and screaming by their parents, who themselves are illegal aliens. And of course, these illegals had no voice in what became of them and how they wound up here. And my goal is to provide some real honest perspective about the way this and other stories concerning immigration and border security are being treated by the media. And again, to provide that perspective that you're probably not going to get anywhere else. Let me start out by reminding you, and if you are familiar with me, you know that I am proud to tell you that I'm a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in the beautiful downtown Santa Barbara. I know they have festivities coming this weekend with Solstice Day and all sorts of good stuff. Santa Barbara is a great place to be. I've also done some other things. I have my own website. My website is michaelcutler.net, and I am especially proud of a new one that I now have called talkborder.com, where I not only post commentaries, and there's a new one up today, but I also post videos of interviews and conversations that I like to have with my audience the way that I am today. With you here on this radio program. Going back to CAPS, they've recently published a number of my pieces at capsweb.org, and my work for them is as an advisor so that they and those who support their important efforts can understand how the immigration service, or the immigration laws, rather, are not being properly enforced or administered the way the Immigration Service used to fail. It's even worse today under DHS, which is why I've given it that nickname of the Department of Homeland Surrender. And in speaking about Homeland Surrender, let's really focus our attention today on the President's speech. And this is the reason that I decided to not invite any guests on today, because I want to use the full hour to talk with you. And by the way, to invite you also to call in if you want to join a conversation about this at 310-982-4145. 310-982-4145 is the number you can call in. But let's dissect what the president had to say. Let's first of all understand that he referred to these illegal aliens that he claimed were young and kids and young kids and so forth as being sometimes known as dreamers. Boy, oh boy, that's a pretty thinly veiled reference to the DREAM Act. Then he went on and made reference to the DREAM Act. And then the president said that this measure that he was to implement, and I believe is illegal, by the way, and I will get to the illegality behind his proposed methods momentarily, but he said that the reason that he was doing this was because purportedly Congress failed to act. You should know that I was invited by Fox News Latino to provide an op-ed piece, which I did. You can find it at capsweb.org. You can find it at michaelcutler.net. And you can find the same thing at talkborder.com. Look, it's not 800,000 as he claimed. In fact, the very same day that the president made that announcement, the Pew Hispanic Center, and I often take issue with the statistics that they come up with because I believe that they very often undercount and underestimate the magnitude of the illegal immigration population in the United States. For the longest time, we've heard there are 11 million illegal aliens in the United States. My belief is it's probably two or three or more times as many as they are claiming, but we're not going to have a debate about the Pew Hispanic Center or their statistics, only to make you aware of the fact that they said that they thought this would involve 1.4 million. Now, I want you to stop and think about it. Not a single application has yet been filed by any of these illegal aliens. They don't even know what paperwork necessarily will be necessary because they're putting it together even as we speak, probably working overtime this evening, burning the midnight oil in Washington. But before we even have the opening salvo hit the desks of those beleaguered adjudicators at USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, a division of the ever unpopular DHS, we are already being told that nearly twice as many are likely to participate as the president estimated. I frankly think we're looking at an avalanche of 4 or 5 million. 4 or 5 million previously or heretofore illegal aliens will, under this president's proposal, suddenly be granted employment authorization. It will be staggering for this to happen at any time at all. But we are confronting so many challenges and threats in America today that it is unfathomable that this action is being taken at this time, in this era, under these challenges. We right now have so many millions of American workers who are out of work through no fault of their own. They have been laid off in part because jobs have been outsourced. They have been laid off in part because the economy, both here and abroad, is to say in the doldrums, certainly not do it justice. The economy is collapsing around our ears, and it started with banking decisions. In fact, we could talk a little bit about the fact that one of those decisions was by Alan Greenspan and company to provide illegal aliens with mortgages and credit cards and subprime mortgages at that, based on the acceptance of matricula cards. Now, what's interesting about the matricula cards is that according to Stephen McGraw, former head of FBI intelligence, when he testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee back in 2003, and I've been before that subcommittee myself many times, well, Mr. McGraw said that those cards, the Mexican matricula cards, were unreliable. He actually referred to them as a serious threat to national security because there's no way of knowing that the person carrying the card is really who they say they are. In fact, I know that law enforcement officials have found people from Iran and other potential terrorist countries, what we call special interest countries, to have been in possession of these documents that purport that the bearer is a citizen of Mexico. So the idea that banks would accept Mexican matricula cards as the basis to determine who to give loans to, and let's face it, a credit card is a non-secured loan. If you default on a car payment, they take your car. If you default on a mortgage payment, they take your house. If you default on your credit card bill, they get nothing to take. So that certainly contributed mightily to the meltdown of just a couple of years ago. So now the president is saying that even though more Americans than ever before are unemployed or underemployed, more Americans than ever before have lost or are losing their homes to foreclosure, and more Americans than ever before are living below the poverty line, and every week we wait with breathless anticipation as the various news stations report on newest unemployment claims and jobs created and unemployment rates. I mean, people watch those numbers almost as closely as they watch the numbers at Wall Street or they watch the numbers on the weather report, because this is about the economic weather of our country and the world. So everyone is so fixated on the unemployment numbers and all these other statistics. Well, I want you to realize that when they claim they create 100,000 jobs and everyone yells hooray and no one even talks about whether or not it's a job that simply pays minimum wage, and lots of luck if it is a minimum wage job and trying to support yourself or your family, suddenly under this wacky program that is being initiated by this administration, potentially millions of previously illegal aliens will have equal status, equal standing in the labor pool with unemployed Americans and unemployed lawful immigrants who must have to listen to what the president is proposing with anger and disgust. I mean, put yourself in the position of a lawful immigrant who waited patiently online, who abided by all the rules, regulations, and laws, did what was required, and now finds that he or she is competing for a job that they desperately need with an alien who violated our borders and our laws. Now, I know I'm going to hear some people say, and I heard this yesterday from some folks when I spoke in Dayton, Ohio. One of the things that I do is work with a wonderful organization, Allen L. Fried Associates. They conduct seminars for our federal government that includes the military, intelligence services, and so forth. And they say, well, you know, these are children. They had no choice in the matter. Here's the problem. And certainly, I know that as Americans, we are the most compassionate people in the world. We are the 911 for the rest of the world. If there's a hurricane or a tsunami or a volcano, we're always there, the first with the most. And that's fine. I'm very proud of our track record as America. But we're not just talking about young people. Remarkable as it might seem, very few news programs were willing to really emphasize a critically important number in the president's speech, and that number is 30. Why is 30 critical? Because that would be the age cutoff for aliens seeking to participate in this program. So now stop, please, and think about that. A 30-year-old alien under this program would be able to walk into an immigration office, or likely not even have to walk into an immigration office, because if we wind up dealing with hundreds of thousands or millions of applications, more than likely, folks, you should know that these applications will be probably adjudicated by mail, with very few, if any, face-to-face interviews being conducted, which gets to the problem of fraud, which is where we are now going with this conversation. Because the president said these are about young people, kids, young kids, but the age cutoff is age 30. Now, I'd love to live in a society where somebody 30 is considered a kid. I'm certainly well beyond 30. I'm on the wrong side of 30. Actually, I'm on the wrong side of 60. But the point is, it's preposterous to think that we're talking about young people. And I don't think age 30 was an accident. The original DREAM Act would have allowed aliens up to their 35th birthday to participate. And then, with all the screaming that went on about how outrageous it was, they lowered it to age 30, which is where we are now, age 30. Why 35? I'll tell you. Originally, when they said age 35, demographically, it is estimated that more than 90% of the illegal aliens present in our country today are younger than age 35. I don't know if we could break it down further and say what percentage are under age 30, but I assure you that most illegal aliens present in our country today are, in fact, younger than 30. And here's another problem. An alien who's 32 years old and lies about his or her identity could probably pass him or herself off as being 29 years of age. I mean, can you really look at somebody and say, oh, yeah, that guy is 29 and that person is 31 and that person is 33? Not likely. So this will encourage aliens up to their early 30s, perhaps, to lie about their identities and make an application to benefit from this. Now, I know the president said that they have to have been here before age 16. How do you prove that? If you're dealing with an illegal alien who claims to have used multiple false identities, and I can tell you as a former INS agent, this is business as usual. Very often, we would arrest illegal aliens and we would find that this person has used 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever, false names. Perhaps even having been deported under one name and then claiming a different name, just like bad guys. That's the reason that law enforcement always fingerprints people they arrest, because it is expected that people violating the law will lie about who they are. If you knew you had a warrant against you and you didn't want to be arrested, you're not going to walk around telling cops your real name, the name that's on the warrant. You're going to give some bogus name. Most of the terrorists on the no-fly list are simply known by names, not necessarily biometrics. We know that the 19 terrorists who hijacked the airplanes turned 4 airliners in the United States into de facto cruise missiles, slaughtered 3,000 innocent victims, and many more have since died or are dying because of their exposure to toxins and so forth. Well, those 19 terrorists wound up using more than 300 false aliases or variations of false aliases to cover their tracks and conceal their identities. The most fundamental question that anyone can be asked or answer upon meeting somebody is, who are you? And we know that the bad guys lie. So right now we know that identity theft is the fastest growing white-collar crime in America. There's a number of reasons why people steal people's identities. They do it to steal their money, their bank accounts, in some cases their houses. Crazy stories. But a big chunk of the reason for identity theft is the massive population of illegal aliens in the United States who are eager to buy a false identity. And in the old days, they would be happy to just get a phony Social Security card. But as more companies resort to E-Verify, and we've been told E-Verify is the solution, well, guess what? The president just figured out a way to make E-Verify irrelevant. The president has just found a way to make the Arizona law and the Alabama law irrelevant. We're waiting for the Supreme Court decision on SB 1070, the Arizona law. In fact, I was very pleased and proud to work with a law firm that was retained by Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona to defend her and her state against the outrageous Department of Justice lawsuit to try to prevent them from enacting a law that essentially paralleled federal statutes. Well, it won't much matter anymore. Because under the president's bill, forgive me, it's not a bill, it's an executive order. Bill is how a law becomes law. This has nothing to do with law, even though the president wants to make it sound as though it's law. Most illegal aliens in the United States, by lying on an application, will be able to game this program and get employment authorizations for an initial period of 2 years. Now, I want you to stop and understand what that means. Once you give an illegal alien employment authorization, that alien is no longer illegal. That alien is immediately entitled to walk into a Social Security office and get a Social Security card under whatever name they made the application for amnesty, in a manner of speaking, for employment authorization. They will immediately be able to walk into a motor vehicle department in whatever state they reside and get a driver's license, again, potentially in a false name. That driver's license will entitle them to get on board airplanes, will entitle them to get into corporate office buildings and government office buildings and seek employment at airports and military bases, places that have national security implications. And by the way, you almost never hear about this. I don't think you've ever really heard about it anywhere else. But if you want to talk about critical infrastructure, folks, look no further than meatpacking plants and food processing plants. Because imagine what a terrorist could do if they could poison food. So the idea that we have people handling our food, we won't know. In fact, even to this day, we don't know who they are. Think of all the outbreaks of salmonella and E. coli and all the other stuff that happens if people become sick and then some die. Imagine that's by accident if it was the result of a concerted effort. So we will now have millions of people who are illegal aliens. We may not be easily able to determine who they are, acquiring employment authorization at a time when jobs are in short supply. Short supply. Insane. But it gets worse. Because the president is invoking this concept of prosecutorial discretion. And in my commentary, in my op-ed piece for Fox News and what I've said elsewhere, is that this is really prosecutorial deception. He is deceiving us because the 800,000 figure is not true. The notion that these are only young people, not true. Age 30 is not young. the fact that there won't be any fraud. I heard that Janet Napolitano, the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender, has said, oh, there's no problem with fraud. Well, she needs to read all the general accountability reports and the inspector general reports about fraud running rampantly throughout the immigration benefits program, throughout the visa process. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. Interestingly, the first congressional hearing that I ever did was back in May of 1997 when I was called by the late Henry Hyde, who at the time was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And back then, Lamar Smith, the current chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, was the chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee in the House of Representatives. And I was called to testify along with several other people, and it was the reaction 4 years late, because the Democratic Party, when they controlled Congress, refused to really act on this issue. And so that we don't get confused about my being partisan, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat, but I don't mind telling you I'm one ticked off Democrat. We had two terrorist attacks committed on our soil in 1993. First, a guy by the name of Amil Kansi, a Pakistani national who had gotten political asylum by lying on his application. We gave him asylum anyway. Stood outside CIA headquarters in January of 1993 with an AK-47, opened fire on vehicles being driven into that complex of buildings in Langley, Virginia at the CIA, opened fire and killed two CIA officers and wounded three others, fled the country, which is what international terrorists and transnational criminals can do. These folks who are foreign nationals, aliens, if you will, and that term's not a pejorative, it just means any person is not a citizen or national, they have an escape hatch through which they can escape, and American bad guys likely will not be able to. They are able to leave our country and go back to their home country, and very often that takes them outside the long arm of the law in the United States, except, of course, in Kansi's case, because of the nature of the crime and the nature of his victims, CIA officers. Our people sent a team out there, and you know that our folks do some of the best work in the world. They found this dirt bag, put him in cuffs, dragged him back here, put him on trial, found him guilty. He was executed, but the people he killed remained dead. The people he injured remained wounded. And then just 1 month later, February 1993, February 26th, we had the first bombing at the World Trade Center, and these were all, again, foreign nationals who had gamed the visa process, gamed the amnesty of 86, and in fact, one guy, Mahmoud Abu Alima, as I recall, his brother as well, had claimed to be agricultural workers, which, thanks to Chuck Schumer, the senator from New York, used to be my congressman, never my representative, let's be clear about it. These guys were involved with others in attacking the Trade Center. They claimed that they had worked on a farm. The only thing they ever planted, folks, was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. And as a consequence, they killed six people. They injured over 1,000. They inflicted over $500 million in damages to that once iconic centerpiece of the lower Manhattan skyline, and the tower almost came down sideways. And had that tower toppled sideways, the likelihood was that the fatality rate would have far and away eclipsed what happened just 9 years later on 9/11, or 8 years later on 9/11. They probably would have killed over 100,000. It likely would have ruptured the seawall. Lower Manhattan would have been flooded. It would have taken out the tunnels, the train and car tunnels that connect Brooklyn with Manhattan, and the tunnels that bring the trains and the cars through the under the Hudson River between New Jersey and Lower Manhattan as well. I don't even want to imagine what that level of destruction would have meant. And the reaction of the Clinton administration, quite frankly, was to do nothing to tighten up on the visa process. They did nothing to tighten up on the immigration benefits program. So finally, May of 97, I was called upon to testify at a hearing about visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. So clearly there was a nexus. And then we had the attacks of 9/11, and the Bush administration did nothing to really tighten up on that either. And in fact, in March 2002, I testified before a hearing, and I was called by Sheila Jackson Lee, a liberal Democrat, about how two of the dead terrorists from 9/11, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, and Atta, of course, one of the ringleaders, had been granted authorization by the old INS 6 months after the attacks, after the world knew they were terrorists, after the world knew they were dead. They got authorization to change immigration status so they could attend flight schools, or perhaps their ghosts could attend flight schools. This is the kind of ineptitude that we're talking about. In 2006, Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost, I mean, this is staggering, sit down and put on your seatbelt, 111,000 immigration files relating to various immigration benefits that these aliens filed for, including 30,000 aliens that our country naturalized, gave United States citizenship to, without providing the adjudicating officers with their files. You want to talk about flying blindly? So here we go again. We have an administration at a time when we can't find enough work for Americans, at least work that enables them to keep their homes from foreclosure. We're being told, great news, we're about to add hundreds of thousands in the estimate by the president, 1.4 million in the estimate of the Pew Hispanic Center, and several million in my personal estimate. We're about to add that many legal workers into a labor pool that can't find work as it is. Wow, is that great news or what? It just seems to be endless. And then the president said that he was acting because Congress had failed to act. I'm sure you all heard that great statement. Congress has failed to act, and that's why he was doing what he was doing. Well, again, I want you to stop and think about what that means. Congress has failed to act. That's absolutely amazing. Well, if Congress failed to act, then explain why. There were a number of hearings. In fact, I testified before three of those in the House, one in the Senate. Congress did act. Repeatedly, they voted down comprehensive immigration reform. Repeatedly, they voted down the DREAM Act. Congress did act. The president's problem was it didn't act the way he wanted them to. So the challenge wasn't that they didn't act. Unlike somebody we all know, Mr. Obama, they didn't vote present. They voted no. Now, I know there are some people out there who are probably asking themselves, can't these students, so-called, simply provide transcripts of the schools where they attended? Here's the problem, and here's the answer to the question. And I'm sure there are some of you out there thinking about this, and I've been asked that question. The problem is that there's no biometric attached to a transcript. Just as people have used other people's social security cards to change their identities and commit identity theft, you will have a land office business and people buying and selling high school transcripts so that illegal aliens will buy the transcript and claim that that's really their transcript, when in fact it's not. We know of cases where we've had over 100 people use one social security number. I can assure you, you will find the same sort of thing happening with high school transcripts, where people will say, I graduated from such and such high school, here's the transcript. Now, if there was time to go out and do field investigations, it would not be that complicated to determine whether or not that the person in the transcript is the person making the application. You bring the transcript to the school with a photograph of the person, perhaps go to the high school yearbook, look at the photograph, see if it matches, presuming that the guy wasn't, as they sometimes say in yearbooks, camera shy, quote unquote. But now here's the problem. Because we are dealing with an avalanche of paper, again, 800,000 if you believe the president's estimate, 1.4 million if you believe Pew Hispanic Center, millions if you believe me, there's no time for that. There's no time for that. And I assure you that the adjudications offices, who right now can't deal with their workload, because right now Citizenship and Immigration Services has to process between 6 and 7 million applications every year without this thing being dumped in their laps. They only have about 600 what they call general investigators. They don't have arrest authority, but they can go out and knock on doors. And there's a handful of ICE agents. So I assure you there won't be any meaningful way of conducting field investigations. That's item number one. Item number two, If the goal is to clear the backlog, and I assure you it will be, just as under the Clinton administration they created a program known as CUSA, Citizenship USA, the best way, the easiest way, not the best way, let's clear that up, the easiest way to clear a backlog is to approve every application that lands on your desk. Think of Lucy at the Bon Bon Factory and that very funny episode of I Love Lucy where she and Ethel are hired to wrap little morsels of candy that come at them on a conveyor belt. Initially, the belt is moving along slowly. They're doing a great job, and they think, oh, this is an easy job. And then the belt picks up speed, and pretty soon the candy is hurtling at them at warp speed. So they try eating it and shoving the candy down their clothing. And it's very funny, but it's not funny when you're dealing with applications for benefits. Because what's going to happen is there's going to be pressure applied to approve the application. Now, I assure you, nobody will be told approve all the applications. That won't happen. What they will be told is how many applications they will be expected to process in a given workday. Now, that's the rub. And having been an adjudicator, I understand the process. To approve an application takes a minute or two. You take a rubber stamp and you stamp the paper in two or three places. You place your initials in an appropriate box. You staple some paperwork together. You throw it into an envelope, and it moves down the bureaucratic production line. If you write a denial, on the other hand, that becomes a serious, lengthy matter, time-consuming, because now you have to write a report, and you have to explain in the report why you don't believe that this person is entitled to the benefit that they apply for. That means you have to have evidence, which means that you have to either have had someone go out and do a field investigation, or there has to be a problem with the paperwork, and then you have to send it out. But the reason for the report is the person has the right to appeal your decision. Well, suddenly, you're looking at a process that will take a couple of hours or maybe even a couple of days. And if you're told you have to process 50 applications in a day, let's say, or 40 applications in a day, how many can you deny and meet your quota, meet your productivity goals? You know, we always hear people say, oh, the problem with government is these folks aren't productive. Well, what people don't understand is that these aren't widgets on an assembly line. And there is, as you well know, an inverse proportion between accuracy and speed also. So the system rewards the adjudicators who are happy to use the approval stamp. That means no integrity once again. You know, it's remarkable. When I was asked to testify before Congress back in 2005, the issue was the fact that while Congress had appropriated enough money for President George W. Bush to hire 800 new ICE agents and 2,000 new Border Patrol agents, the administration turned around and, sparse as those numbers were, the president said, no, I'm only going to hire 143 special agents for ICE, not 800, and I'm only going to hire 210 Border Patrol agents, not 2,000. And I got a call from the House Immigration Subcommittee. John Hostetler was chairman at the time, a courageous guy, courageous, and he ultimately paid with his seat in the House because they would not support him for reelection. He took on President Bush and said, this is nuts, and they held a hearing. He and Jim Sensenbrenner contacted me and asked me, Jim Sensenbrenner, at the time chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and said, will you testify at the hearing? I said, try to stop me. I'd love to testify. And one of the first things I did was to look up what a gentleman at the time by the name of Aguirre had to say, Eduardo Aguirre. Aguirre was the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services. This is the same agency we're talking about right now, folks, the agency that would be responsible for adjudicating all these applications. Applications for various immigration benefits, whether it's ability to go to school, whether it's the ability to become a resident alien or a United States citizen, all those applications have to go through Citizenship and Immigration Services. And I looked at what Mr. Aguirre had to say because he had just testified before the same subcommittee about the resources that he had. And not surprisingly, he painted a very peachy keen picture. Everything is fabulous. There's nothing wrong here. Because he works for the president. What's he going to say? The administration is screwing up? But what was so remarkable to me, and I think you'll find this remarkable, was that Mr. Aguirre said that his three priorities, priority one was to clear up the backlog of applications, which is what worries me here, if that's your first priority. Priority two, he said, was to improve customer service. Well, it's fine. I like to see people smiling. But you know what was outrageous? It was his third priority, and that was to enhance national security. Folks, we're talking about 2005, 4 years after 9/11. Even to this day, do you think that national security should take third place behind productivity and customer service? I was so incensed, so outraged, I went so wild. I looked him up on the internet. Boy, thank God for computers. And I said, who is this guy, Aguirre? Well, guess what? It turned out that before coming to the federal government, Mr. Aguirre had a high-level job. He was the president of the private international bank of the Bank of America. The Bank of America was one of the first major banks to agree to accept Mexican matricula cards, the same cards that the FBI had warned constituted a threat to national security. So do you wonder what in God's name we're talking about here? Why on earth would you look at the situation and say, my biggest priority is to clear up the backlog, followed by customer service, and then we'll get around to national security? If that's the orientation in our government, God help us. Because, you see, the point of these programs, in my judgment, having worked for the government for 30 years, is that they are simply looking to process these folks quickly and get them the documents that they want. That's why they're doing this in the first place. This does not serve America's best interests. How do Americans benefit by having hundreds of thousands or millions of new authorized workers join the workforce? How does anyone benefit when we now encourage more illegal aliens to run our borders with the anticipation that if they're willing to commit fraud, that they can be rewarded for committing fraud? This is crazy stuff, but that's exactly what's happening. And in fact, I ended my article for Fox News Latino by saying that, in a manner of speaking, the president had just fired the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens around the world, and for them, the borders of the United States would be the finish line. This is a huge incentive. Run the border, come to America, fill out some paperwork, get yourself a high school transcript that doesn't belong to you, make a false claim, and who's going to examine this? Who's going to investigate it? What's the likelihood you're going to get caught? Bad guys do a kind of risk analysis, you know. They look at a situation and they say, well, how much money can I make, and what's the risk that I'm going to get caught? Not only what's the risk that I'm going to get caught, but what's the risk that I'm going to do time or that something terrible is going to happen? You see, the idea to the way that we adjudicate applications should first and foremost consider national security. Well, I think I've shown you that this has a huge negative impact on national security. The next thing that we should look at, especially now with the economy the way it is, and by the way, I want to remind you of another factor. Foreign workers, and I don't blame them, I would do the same thing if I were in their shoes. Foreign workers who come here, whether they're here legally or illegally, all have the same goal. And that goal is to send as much of the money they can get their hands on back to their families in their native countries. That's why you will very often see 20 illegal aliens jammed into a two-bedroom apartment, because every penny they can save and send home is significant in third-world countries. They are here for one reason and one reason alone: send money back home. If you look at this film that I was in, They Come to America, documentary, I had a small role in it. Some illegal aliens were interviewed, and they said that their goal was to send money home. One guy said that he was looking to send, and I forget if it was $60,000 or $70,000 back home, and he said once that amount of money left the United States, he'd be gone and you'd never see him again. Mexico every year gets well over $20 billion a year in remittances, and that's just the visible money. It doesn't deal with the money that's invisible. So understand the problem. First and foremost, the immigration laws are supposed to protect the safety of our nation and our citizens. Secondly, it's supposed to protect our jobs. In fact, I have often said that you can summarize the intention of our immigration laws and our borders with six words: protect American lives, protect American jobs. Well, clearly, we're not doing that any longer. between visa fraud with the H-1B and other high-tech visas and porous borders at the low end of the working scale, what we are doing is making Americans compete with foreign workers for their jobs here in the United States, and that's illegal. And what you may not know, folks, is that prior to the Second World War, immigration was the responsibility of the United States Department of Labor, because it was understood by our leaders back then during what is now known as the Greatest Generation. Our leaders understood that they had an obligation to American workers to provide them with every opportunity to be successful. What made America, America, what created the American dream, if you will, was not simply having lots of people enter the United States willy-nilly. Ellis Island was a quarantine station. They were very strict. They had no compunctions against splitting up families. If a family member came here, was found to have a dangerous disease, or found to be undesirable for some other reason, they were sent home. And if the family didn't want to be separated from their family member, then their only option was to go home with the person who was being turned around at Ellis Island. And it was on an island, because that way they couldn't get to the mainland unless the government wanted them to, just the way you didn't get off of Alcatraz. So understand what we're really talking about. What made America successful was that the government protected the American workforce and nurtured the middle class. The idea in America was that if you were willing to work hard, and if you were conscientious, and if you could acquire a skill or a trade or an education, you could write the next success story. You know, we used to have a wonderful expression in the United States that if you could build a better mousetrap, the world would be the path to your door. When was the last time you heard that expression being used anywhere? Build a better mousetrap and the world will be the path to your door. Very famous saying, and it summed up America. Think how many innovators did what they did here in the United States. They built the better mousetrap, whether it was the automobile, whether it was the incandescent light bulb, whatever it was, and the world did beat a path to their door. Education was the key. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer, April 30th, 2009. I wrote about it. It's been documented quite a number of times on the CAPS website, and I will remind you that their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. It's on my website, michaelcutler.net. And I do certainly plan to put this up on my own website at talkborder.com as well. But Greenspan went before Schumer, and I watched it live as it was happening, streaming video. And by the way, the video is still available. You can see this happening. And Alan Greenspan talked about how too much money was going to this group of Americans who have skills or education. And the term that he used to describe such skilled Americans or educated Americans, folks, it literally took my breath away. Because he said that these Americans with those skills or those educational standards or achievements were the privileged elite. Can you imagine that? The privileged elite. What he was describing was the middle class. Privileged elite. And he said that the reason that too much money was going to these people was because the government was shielding these American workers from foreign competition. Well, that's what the law is supposed to do. That's why companies have tariffs also, folks. And Greenspan said that it was his goal, it should be America's goal, to eliminate or greatly reduce inequality in wages. Now, he wasn't talking about race, religion, ethnicity, gender. I could certainly agree with that. I couldn't argue a bit with that. But that was not what Greenspan called for. Greenspan had said at that day, April 30th, 2009, that there should be a great reduction or total equality in wages between Americans with skills and Americans with no skills. Does that not take your breath away? Was he not describing communism, you know, to each according to his needs, from each according to his ability? Is this not a repudiation of the American dream? Forget about getting that education. My mom came here from Poland ahead of the Holocaust as a teenage girl. She lived in a rooming house and made $3 a week working in an umbrella factory. I can't even imagine the tough times my mom, may she rest in peace, experienced. 14 years old in a strange country by herself, while her mother was being hunted down by the Nazis of the Second World War, by the Third Reich. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother. But my mother said to me, I only had a fourth grade education, but you are going to go to college. You will go to college because that, in America, is the key to success. Tell that to American workers who are computer programmers and technicians and engineers who can't find a job, who are now competing with people from India and elsewhere for jobs that don't pay enough money to justify the investment of time and talent and money in an advanced degree. This is nuts. If you want people to excel, then you have to reward them for making the effort and making the achievement. And suddenly, Alan Greenspan goes before the Immigration Subcommittee in the United States Senate and refers to middle-class Americans as the privileged elite. He wasn't talking about CEOs of bankrupt companies that earn $100 million a year. He was talking about middle-class Americans who are trying to make mortgage payments, the privileged elite. And now we have the president talking about how we need to have these brilliant and bright and entrepreneurial aliens, these young kids. And then he talked about how they need people to work on the farm. I'd love to know how many brilliant entrepreneurs are going to go work on the farm. I mean, it was such a hodgepodge of ridiculous concepts and claims and assertions by the president of the United States at a time when every politician, regardless of what office he or she might be running for, promises to create new jobs. The immigration system is failing not because the laws are bad. The immigration system is failing not because we're not supposed to have secure borders. The reason our immigration system is failing, folks, is because the politicians from both sides of the aisle are more concerned with currying favor from the campaign contributors than they are with representing the best needs of the American people. Our country is being sliced and diced and sold to the highest bidder. That's what is happening. Jobs are being sold to the highest bidder. Rather than looking at the situation and saying, we need to protect the American workforce, maybe the solution is to raise tariffs a bit so that it makes no sense to outsource jobs or bring in foreign workers. What we're now hearing from the president is that hundreds of thousands or perhaps millions of foreign workers will suddenly be added to the labor pool of Americans who are unemployed or underemployed. And yet we are told this is a government by the people, of the people, for the people. I find that highly impossible to believe. Our government is supposed to represent our citizens first and foremost. When we say a pledge of allegiance to the flag and to the Constitution and the country, wouldn't it be nice to see our politicians say a pledge of allegiance to we the people, their constituents? A couple of weeks ago, I had the distinct privilege, and believe me, it's a privilege, to have interviewed Lou Barletta. In fact, I believe I had just interviewed him this past Monday. And we immediately got that video of that interview up on my website. I would love for you to go there and see it. Lou Barletta and Steve King of Iowa, Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. These guys are American heroes. They are going after the government to make them accountable. Senator Grassley is going after Fast and Furious, and I'm thrilled he is. So is Congressman Issa. This idea that we've given perhaps 2,000 high-powered weapons to the cartels. We see all kinds of crazy stuff being perpetrated by our government at the highest levels. And I got to tell you, it's impossible, at least in my mind, to reconcile all that the government does and does not do with reality. It makes absolutely no sense. If we were serious about it, understand something. Transportation Safety Administration, the TSA, right now has, from what I have read, perhaps as many as 60,000 employees. We have about 3,000 ICE agents actually enforcing immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. Every year, tens of billions of dollars in remittances are wired from the United States to foreign countries. This is money that is lost to our economy. This is money that is not invested or saved or spent in America. And this is money not being earned by American citizens or lawful immigrants. This is money that is worthless to our economy. Meanwhile, in the name of an economic stimulus package, think of how our children and their children's futures have been mortgaged, purportedly to pump money into the economy to prime that economic pump. The president's proposal of giving all these aliens employment authorization, undoubtedly they will send as much money as they earn or as they can out of our economy. So there we go. If this isn't a triple whammy or a quadruple whammy, I don't know where we're up to, but we certainly are getting whammied. This is about unfair competition for American workers. It's about a threat to national security. It's about ignoring that six-word phrase that explains our immigration laws: protect American lives, protect American jobs. It's impossible to understand it. It's impossible to imagine any American voting for the president because he did this. If anybody has a half brain, I would imagine they would want to vote against him if they would stop and think about what the ramifications are. And now I want to address another issue. And this goes back to the journalists who, trying to be as wise as Solomon, sit before the cameras or the microphones and talk about the mythical Latino vote. And I've talked about this before, and I feel it's important to mention it again this evening in light of the president's most recent statements. The idea that anybody can point the finger at any person and prognosticate, predict who that person will vote for because we know that he or she is a Latino, or we know that he or she is a Jew, or we know that he or she is black or white or Protestant or Catholic. Wow. I mean, if you want to talk about profiling, folks, here is the most insidious form of profiling I could probably imagine. And often the people spewing this stuff are the very same journalists who, when they hear about law enforcement doing some profiling, scream their heads off. Oh, my God, they profiled. Well, isn't it profiling to look at someone's last name and say, oh, Rodriguez, we know who Rodriguez is going to vote for? Or Goldstein, oh, with that name? Yeah, we know who he's going to vote for. It doesn't work that way, folks, because you should understand something. Any American, irrespective of race, religion, or ethnicity, should be voting against a government or an administration that would ignore immigration laws that are designed to protect our lives and our jobs. And the people doing the worst in this economy are America's minorities, Latinos and blacks. And, you know, understand that when we allow people from other countries to come into this country without being inspected and then provide them with lawful status, we really don't know who they are. That's why we have an inspections process. So that means we are wind up with more criminals, more gang members, and so forth. The most likely victim of ethnic organized crime, whether it's within the Latino community, and we're talking about MS-13 or the Mexican cartels, the Russian community, the Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Caribbean community, the Italian community with La Cosa Nostra, you know, LCN as it's called in law enforcement, the Italian mob. The most likely victims of all of these thugs, first and foremost, are the people of the same ethnicity. So the kids that live in communities that wind up with lots of gang members in it, those kids are at risk of violence or being recruited into the gangs. The people that live in those communities are at most at risk from being assaulted, stabbed, raped, coerced into prostitution, whatever. Because what is happening is that the criminals are able to game the system. That's the reason we have an immigration system in place, to keep out aliens who pose a threat to our safety or our well-being. So when Napolitano, who is the person in charge of enforcing immigration laws throughout the whole country, says, oh, immigration is almost insignificant and the borders are secure, I mean, folks, that ship has sailed. If you can't trust the messenger, as Johnny Cochran famously remarked, the O.J. Simpson attorney, if you can't trust the messenger, then you can't trust the message. The president has called for an action to be taken that circumvents the legislative process. He alluded to the idea that he was single-handedly doing something that Congress wouldn't do because Congress failed to act. Congress acted. Congress said no. This is a bad idea. It said no, not once, not twice, but a number of times. Each time, it decisively voted down the DREAM Act and comprehensive immigration reform. So it's not that Congress failed to act. It's not that we're dealing with young people. It's not that we're dealing with 800,000, but I think many more. And this vague idea that, well, some of these people will start new companies is an absurdity. How do you know what someone is going to do if they're given some opportunity? Are you going to stop some guy randomly on the street and say, what's the likelihood in the next 6 years you're going to start your own company and hire 1,000 American workers? It's crazy stuff, folks. You know, when we're dealing with honest-to-God children who were dragged here as youngsters, you certainly can feel empathy for them. But you know what's so remarkable is that when we do hear the stories about how illegal aliens drag their kids through the desert, where they're subjected to the potential of dying from heat exhaustion, I mean, the desert is about as inhospitable as you can find a place on this planet, where the potential exists that they might be bitten by a poisonous snake or tarantula, not tarantulas, but scorpions or other poisonous insects, or perhaps shot and kidnapped by gang members and smuggling organizations. This happens all the time on the border. We find dead bodies down there. You have parents doing this with young children. And yet you never hear about these aliens being prosecuted for the reckless endangerment of their kids. Isn't that remarkable? If you drove your car at high speed down an American highway with your child in the back seat, not wearing a seatbelt, not buckled into a car seat, you'd be pulled over by the cops, probably arrested, and charged with the reckless endangerment of your own child because of being irresponsible in the way you were driving your vehicle and not protecting your child. If you get drunk and drive and you have a child in the car in New York and elsewhere, that's a special crime. It's a separate crime. And you're going to go to jail. I assure you, you will, and you should. I have no problem with those laws. Why then is it that when an alien drags a child through the desert, endangering the safety of the child, I mean, dead children do show up in the desert, why is it that those people that do this are never, ever prosecuted? And again, we come back to the problem that when we're dealing with such numbers, there will be no integrity to the process. You should also know that there is a way that a member of Congress can sponsor a private bill so that the exceptional alien, child or otherwise, can be granted lawful status under certain conditions, and that's called private bill. And if we were talking about a relatively small number of such illegal aliens, and here I'm talking about a couple of thousand where you could actually do field investigations, I might look differently at it. But the way this was set up with an age cutoff of 30, let me tell you, this is not designed to take care of the exceptional child who is caught up in a nightmare scenario. This is about doing a political equation and looking to curry favor with the exploiters of labor. Now, two quick things I will talk about. We're going to run a little bit long this evening, but I have to make these points. You should know that in 1986, when I was an agent and they passed the Immigration Reform and Control Act, when nearly 4 million aliens were granted lawful status in our country, when those aliens were given those cards and they went back to their employer and said, I will keep working for you, but not for $5 an hour, not in a factory where there's no air conditioning, not in a factory where the emergency fire escapes are blocked, and not for a company that won't pay me on the books because I'm not getting Social Security and unemployment insurance, those bosses very often fired those workers. They fired them. And when they fired them, they did not go without workers for long. They just hired the next wave of illegal aliens who were desperate to come here and were encouraged by that amnesty, saying to themselves, wow, if they did it once, they'll do it again. So that's how we wound up in the mess that we're in now. And I assure you that if these folks are working here illegally, and they go to their bosses and they say, look, I now have employment authorization. You can no longer exploit me if you buy the argument, and I don't, that they do the work Americans won't do. Americans are the hardest working, most conscientious, and productive workers in the world. It's that the illegals work under substandard conditions for substandard wages. But if you legalize them, you can no longer exploit them. But what now happens is the old story, it's economics, and it's classic economics, supply and demand. You will suddenly have so many more people competing for those limited numbers of jobs, which will drive down the wages further. Corporations, and the president said it, that CEOs were thrilled with the idea. Of course they are, because it's no longer difficult to find workers who won't work for meager wages. This will drive down wages. This will force workers to take worse working conditions, fewer or perhaps no benefits, because they know darn well that if you don't want your job, there's a line of 500 people standing outside the door who would be happy to take your place. That's how supply and demand works. So what the president is doing, and the old Democratic Party was the party of labor. I'm a registered Democrat because my dad was my biggest hero. He was a construction worker. He was a plumber by trade, as he used to say. Well, the president is doing exactly what corporations want, dumping labor. You know, the old thing about dumping, if you dump a commodity on the market, you drive down the price. You know how the De Beers Company of Amsterdam, the diamond company, controls the supply of diamonds so that they keep the price of diamonds up because they control supply to control price. Well, here, they're not controlling supply. They're greatly increasing the supply of workers. And meanwhile, those borders are not secure. The president can say what he wants. Those borders are anything but secure, folks. They only exist on maps. So all this is going to do is to encourage more illegal aliens to enter the United States, and it's going to enable bosses to drastically cut wages, and you're going to wind up with more Americans earning less money for their labor. This is exactly what we can anticipate the ultimate implications and ramifications will be of Mr. Obama's prosecutorial discretion, which is why I called it what I called it. Because it is deception. It is legislative deception. Perhaps it's legislative excretion. I mean, I hate to tell you in honest terms what I think of it. It's a betrayal of the American worker. We should expect better from our government. I just wish, quite frankly, that Mitt Romney would stand up and stake out a position that makes it clear that he stands against this betrayal. You know, when we were children, we all played that famous game of musical chairs. And you know how the game gets played. They have a row of chairs, usually facing both ways, back to back, and the music plays. The dilemma is that there's one fewer chair than the number of kids. And when the music stops, everyone scrambles for a chair. And whoever is remaining standing has to leave and takes a chair with her, or him or her. And the music continues to play. And again, the music stops, and everyone scrambles for a chair until eventually only one child in one chair is left, and that child is the winner. Well, that's a lot like the job market. And what the president is doing right now is opening the door to that room, letting lots more kids in, but not bringing in any more chairs. So it's not just that they're one chair short, they are many chairs short. They are many jobs short. This is not a game. This is not a game. This is about the future of American citizens and lawful immigrants. This is about national security. And this is about a president who, when he becomes frustrated with Congress's failure not to act, but to rubber stamp his decrees, tries to find end runs around the Constitution and the legislative process. Congress acted, folks. It really did. It acted to say no. It acted to say no, and the president thinks he has found a way to do an end run around Congress and to do an end run around the Supreme Court should they, as I anticipate they will, as I hope they will, say that it is lawful for Arizona and other states to enforce immigration laws, because now there will be precious few illegal aliens to be found in the United States of America. And in fact, in the letter that was sent out to Napolitano and others, that even when immigration encounters illegal aliens before they act, they should give consideration to this idea that unless these aliens have serious convictions for crimes, they're not going to be arrested. They're not going to be you're not going to do anything with them except give them employment authorization. Bottom line, illegal aliens will no longer be taken into custody in the United States. Bottom line, the best thing that could happen to an illegal alien is to be found by immigration, because rather than being arrested, they will get a magic document that will enable them to legally work in the United States for a minimum of 2 years, enable them to get driver's licenses, enable them to get Social Security cards. That's what we're talking about. Basically, the president has enacted a law without lawful authority. Pretty bizarre, isn't it? If this infuriates you nearly as much as it infuriates me, and I certainly hope it does, you know, I always like to remind people that democracy is not a spectator sport. Sitting at home and telling your wife or your kids or your husband or your neighbor how angry you are, it doesn't do much good. Long time ago, I saw a Peanuts cartoon, and I used to love Charlie Schulz's stuff. And Peanuts was saying that doing a good job around here is kind of like urinating in your suit when you're wearing a dark suit. Gives you a feeling of warmth, but nobody notices. We have to do more than try to give ourselves a feeling of warmth by beating our breasts and saying this is dumb. I want you to contact your elected representatives. I want you to write letters, probably to the White House is pointless because he has to know how Americans feel. But it wouldn't hurt anyway, just in case he really is so out of touch with America and our Constitution. But I really want you to contact your elected representatives. And I want you to let them know in your letter, in no uncertain terms, that if they don't stand up against this, that not only won't you vote for them, but you will work for anybody who opposes them in the next election. Because after all, folks, they may not care about our jobs, but they do care about their own jobs. And they now need to be reminded that they work for us, we the people, and we certainly have them outnumbered. There's 535 members of Congress, both houses, both parties. There's 300 million American citizens. This latest insanity coming out of Washington should be the last straw, should remove any doubt in anybody's mind that this administration could care less about the plight of the average American citizen. I always like to tell people democracy is not a spectator sport. It certainly is not. The First Amendment, everyone rattles off. Freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. Well, there's two other components that everybody seems to forget. The right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, oh boy, if you don't have grievances, you better check to make certain you don't have a flatline EEG. And the right to peaceably assemble. Because the founding fathers understood the significance of debate, discourse, and discussion. Because back then, when this great nation was founded, the only way you could have that debate was live and in person. There was no telephone, there was no talk radio, there was no internet or social medium. The only way that you could communicate was face-to-face, and all that our government said was, do it peaceably. And indeed, do it peaceably, but get your voice heard. We as Americans have always been known for the guts to stand up for what we believed in. If ever there was a time that we need to stand up and express our feelings and our thoughts and make clear what we believe in and what we stand for, this is the time. Election Day is rapidly approaching. We the people have got to make the politicians remember who they work for. It's time that the tail stopped wagging the dog. Folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. I hope you will do what I ask you to do. Visit the capsweb.org website. Visit michaelcutler.net. Certainly go to talkborder.com if you like what you see. Pass the information along to your friends and neighbors. Let them know about those three great websites. And please take action. Write those letters. Make those phone calls. Make certain that there's no doubt in anybody's mind that, as they say in the movie Network, we're mad as hell and we won't take it anymore. Thank you for listening this evening, folks. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Hope your festivities are as festive and joyous as you want them to be. And I look forward to joining you next time at the same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. So long, everybody. Have a great weekend. See you soon.